After he returned from what was to be his last African safari in 1953, Ernest Hemingway wrote a fictional memoir about it, which he never published. To mark the centenary of his birth on July 21st, Scribner is bringing out a version of that manuscript, edited by Hemingway's son, Patrick. Book critic Maureen Corrigan wishes that Hemingway's old publishing company had found some other way to celebrate.
You probably already suspect what I'm about to tell you, that Ernest Hemingway's final posthumous work, a fictional memoir called True at First Light, would have been better left undisturbed in the dark. As usually is the case, the grave robber here is a relative, one of Hemingway's sons, Patrick, who took it upon himself to edit down, by half, this manuscript that his father wrote about his last African safari. In his endnotes that bash feminist critics, and particularly in his introduction, Patrick comes off as a rather smarmy character, no doubt anticipating that Bwana Hemingway's account of how he shouldered the white man's burden in Kenya might seem racist. Patrick declares that, had Ralph Ellison been alive, he, Patrick, would have asked Ellison to write the introduction because Ellison was such an admirer of Hemingway's work. Patrick should have just asked some other black person, John Edgar Wideman, Della Reese, to vouch for Hemingway in the introduction. At least then we would have been spared his own graceless attempts to forestall criticism of his father. And Hemingway doesn't need such ham-fisted defending. Of course, like 99.9% of the other great writers we read, he's politically incorrect. But even his lesser works are worth investigating because of those astonishing passages where his voice sounds unforced, his spare sentences released from the weight of modifiers soar, and he shows us, from his momentary, godlike, authorial perch, something authentic about life. In True at First Light, Hemingway offers a fictional account of the safari he took in 1953 with his fourth wife, Mary. How fictional? Well, it's hard to know just from this book, but for Mary's sake, I hope Hemingway was lying like a dog. Much of this narrative concerns Hemingway's love affair with a young African woman named Deba, who likes to fondle his gun holster, and Mary's sporting determination not to mind this supplementary wife, because only white women count as rivals. Worried about what never in fact did happen, that Hemingway might dump her for wife number five, Mary resolves to hunt down a killer lion to prove her uniqueness. Of course, at the crucial moment, Mary's aim is off, and Hemingway and a game warden fire the fatal bullets, although they let the little woman believe she's a hotshot. There are also vague subplots involving Hemingway's antipathy toward Christian missionaries and a threatened Mau Mau attack. This silliness takes up most of the narrative as Patrick shaped it, but fortunately, he had the sense to include some terrific pages in which Hemingway ruminates about the mystery writer Simenon, and Paris, and stupid literary critics, and even male self-importance. Here, for instance, is part of a wonderful passage where Hemingway pokes fun at his own pompous justification for boozing. I knew it was not just a habit, nor a way of escaping. It was a purposeful dulling of a receptivity that was so highly sensitized, as film can be, that if your receptiveness were always kept at the same level, it would become unbearable. You make out quite a noble case for yourself, I thought, and you know, too, that you drink because you love it. A few weeks ago, I was engaged in one of those conversations that English professors are mistakenly thought to have all the time. A colleague asked, "In terms of influence, quality, and originality, who do you think is the greatest writer of the 20th century?" "Hemingway," I immediately answered. "Oh no," some other professors rumbled, "his stocks are way down." They agreed on Faulkner. But I'm right and they're wrong. Unlike Faulkner, with his faux biblical profundities, Hemingway left the Victorian age in the dust and ushered us into the hard-boiled realities of modernity. In the last line of The Sun Also Rises, he gave us the cynical motto for the 20th century, "Isn't it pretty to think so?" Hemingway is the champ, the fellow with the all-round biggest literary cojones of the century, and even an embarrassing performance like True at First Light can't strip him of that title.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University.